Costume is a huge part of getting into character. Your body soaks in what you're wearing and you turn into somebody else. Those words are spoken by the actress Jane Levy, and they sit at the heart of our conversation on the show today. I'm so excited, you guys, because on the show today, I get to hang out with my old friend, Caitlin Day. Caitlin is currently the wardrobe supervisor on the Eliza tour of Hamilton the Musical. You guys know Hamilton the Musical. You're familiar with it. And she's on the show today chatting about her journey in the world of costume and wardrobe, how she got into it. I met Caitlin years ago when we were just teenagers working in the in a teen drama club theater program. And we've managed to stay in touch since, and it's just such a joy we stay in touch, you know, doing the whole social media game, but we don't get the opportunity to talk as much. And so it's such a really cool pleasure to be able to sit and chat with her just about her work and her career, learn some stuff I didn't know. And we're going to get into all of that in just a few minutes. But before we do, and of course, if you're interested in donating to the Talkback, you know what to do. You head over to GoFundMe.com/the Talkback, and you can make a donation of any type. All donations are appreciated, and they go to the further development of the show. As you guys know, I've been away a little bit. I took July off for the most part. What you may or may not know is I debuted another show. I have a new show, a new podcast on the waves. It's called The New York Mystery Machine. And myself and my co-host Christina Marinelli explore a lot of the greatest New York-based mysteries, hauntings, true crimes, unsolved murders, unsolved mysteries, anything paranormal, aliens, all that jazz. We're taking that. We're talking about it. And we're now in our, I believe when this comes out, we just released our fourth episode on Monday. And we're getting some good feedback. So I love if you guys check that out. If you guys enjoy the paranormal episode I do every October, then you'll love this show. If you're a fan of true crime, you'll love this show. If you're in New York or from New York or have ever visited New York, you'll love this show. So head on over. It's called The New York Mystery Machine. You can check it out on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you're listening to this podcast. You can check it out there. And then we got some great social media at NY Mystery Machine on Facebook and Instagram, and at NY Mysteries on Twitter. So check it out. I'm proud of the work I'm doing, and so I hope that you will check it out. And you know, with that, I'm also creating a new Patreon, and I decided that we're gonna focus our Patreon efforts for the New York Mystery Machine. So, you know, if you donate to the New York Mystery Machine's Patreon, which is gonna debut in just a couple of weeks, you'll also be supporting this show because it's a whole network of shows I've kind of created here. So I'm really excited to get into all of that and further. You know, just plugging away here at the Talkback. I do know I have 3 new episodes of Talkback coming out. So it's hard to manage all the episodes. The New York Mystery Machine comes out every single week. This show was doing every other week, but I am going to be doing the next 3 weeks of broadcast. So you have Caitlin this week, you have a really cool guest next week, and they have another couple of guests in 2 weeks who hosts another podcast, which I'm really excited about. And so a lot of cool episodes coming out, so make sure you check out the Talkback for the next 3 weeks in a row, maybe even 4 weeks, but definitely 3 weeks. As we march to episode 100, right? I'm getting so close to that big 100 episodes of the Talkback. So I'm so excited. I've talked so much this intro. I missed you guys so much. And so it's good to just chat a little bit. And, but Caitlin Day is on the show today. Like I said, she is just wonderful, remarkable, super gifted, and she's educating us about the whole world of wardrobe on Broadway and in major theater. A lot of things I didn't know. I'm sure a lot of things that you didn't know. So with that being said, let's get on to it. I'm Adam Mace, and this is The Talkback. Hey, everybody, and welcome to the talk back. As I said in the intro, I am so excited to be back, and I'm more so excited because I get to chat with a dear old friend. Gosh, what I want to do is introduce her by her full God-given name. But I won't. Maybe later. We'll see. Like I said, she is a super talented artist. I've known her for years. She's currently the wardrobe supervisor for the Eliza Tour of Hamilton, which is currently sitting in Los Angeles, California. Give it up for Caitlin Day. Welcome to the show, Caitlin.
Woo, thanks for having me.
It was very hard to not say the two middle words. I don't think I've ever...
Do you curse on this?
Every now and then I throw them out. So I think I just... Okay, here it is, folks. So Caitlin and I did teen drama together. We did theater but we teenagers. And there was a time, and I don't really know when it was or under what circumstances I said this in, but in one breath, one day, I just said, Caitlin motherfucking Day. And I said it, and then I said it a couple of times, and then one day I said KMFD, and then, like, it took off.
It stuck.
It stuck.
Yeah.
And I don't know how it stuck, but it did. So much that, like, you're in my phone as KMFD. Like, I have everyone. I literally made a point. There was a point in my life where I was like, I'm 30. I guess I was 30 when I did it. It wasn't recently, but it was when I turned 30. I went into my phone. I took everyone's nicknames out. I was like, I am an adult now, damn it. And I'm
you did not.
And I changed anyone who had a nickname. I changed it to their full given name. And I know that's not everyone does that, but I was like, I'm doing this. And I kept literally one name the way I had it forever because I could not bring myself to change KMFD out of my phone. So much that, like, I went to go text you to be on the show, and I started writing Caitlin, and nothing was coming up. And I was like, why is it not coming up? And I was like, oh, I forgot. She's the only person. Anyway, Caitlin, I've spoken so much. How are you? How's life? You're back in LA. The world was in chaos for a year and a half. How are you?
I'm good. It's been a crazy, let's just say 2 years. Let's just lump it all into two. I know it's 16 months, which is sort of like a year and a half, but I feel like at this point, 2 years ago, I was in Chicago doing the same thing I'm doing here. And then, knew I was going to go to LA, went to LA, did 2 weeks of work here, and we were closed for 2 weeks,
Like everyone was.
like everyone was. And then this all started to happen very quickly. I mean, we were supposedly going back in October. So I planned this whole summer where I was going to see everyone and have a New York summer. I missed it a lot. I spent a year in LA waiting out the pandemic because they kept pushing it. It was 2 weeks, then it was 2 months, then it was 6 months, then it was a year, then it was longer than that. So once we got to a year, I was like, all right, enough's enough. I'm going home. I need to see my New York people. I need to get vaccinated. And, I was home for 4 months, which felt very quick.
Yeah.
And then we got, a month before I left, we got the notice that, we're coming back in July.
And, and the tragic part about it all is that you're here for, 4 months. And in those 4 months, you still can't really see anybody because people are still, being smart. Like, not everyone's, vaccinated at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
And, people weren't qualified to be vaccinated. I mean, I got home. Luckily, my parents got both of their vaccines before I got home, I got home. And a week after I got home, I actually got a restaurant job in Herald Square and was like, great, now I qualify for a vaccine. And 3 days later, got my first shot. Was like, please poke me. I was never so emotional. I'm not afraid of needles. And I wasn't afraid of it. I was just it was just a wave of relief.
Yeah.
It actually felt like this was going to end. I think I started tearing up. I was in this old health building downtown, and I was waiting in a theater of all places, this little tiny theater room where they pull a screen down. And I was like, oh my God. We're coming back.
Yeah, I mean, I felt the same. I don't like needles, but I was like, I don't care. I
Yeah.
sick me with every needle in the world. Not everyone, but the ones that we need to be needled.
The ones that we need.
And so the ones we needled. And so I went down to the, it was the college in Brooklyn that was doing it. I forget which one it was, or the high school, the school. And it was like all the military were doing it, which was pretty dope. And yeah, I just I remember I was like, I didn't even feel it, which is weird because I felt every needle that's ever been in my body. I've always felt it. And I just think my body was so excited about it that like I just did not care. Like I was like, I'm not afraid. I don't care. I just want this to be over. Like I want to be able to like hug my mom and like, you know, and do the thing. And you know, I was very, I mean, I was kind of blessed throughout this pandemic in terms of my mom was in my bubble at one point. So at least like I got to see my mom. You know, it was just me, my mom, my friend Natalie, and that was really, and then her parents. Like that was our little bubble basically. I saw Christian every now and then, but he was always getting tested because he was working at the college. So, you know, for me, I, you know, my worst part was, and Pete, listeners of the show know that, you know, my girlfriend moved back home in September, mid-pandemic. And so we had planned a ton of different times to see each other throughout this pandemic, and every single time, either the cases went up where she was, or you know, there was one point where her whole family got COVID, and it was just
Oh my
the
God. Wait, where does
pits.
she live?
She's in Illinois.
Okay, so I was also going through a long distance relationship in the middle of the pandemic. My boyfriend lives in Spokane, Washington. So we spent, I think the longest we went was March till July without seeing each other. So like I can relate to that.
Yeah, it was,
It's
yeah, it was
rough.
tough.
Time
Yeah.
zones don't help either.
Time zones, I mean,
I
yeah,
know Illinois is only one, but
but
like
still,
still.
it throws things off. I want to talk about the work that you do. You know, like as I said, you know, earlier, we know each other for a minute. We acted, we did the things, we had a long, we did the longest show in the history of musical theater, How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying.
It was so great.
It was just long. Anyone who knows the show How to Succeed in Business Without Really
Oh,
Trying,
yeah. I
the
mean,
show is as long as the title of the show. It's just
it
long.
really is. But
And
it was, I don't know. I had fun because I played
no,
like the
no, yeah,
best role
we
ever.
both played like bit parts in it. So there was a period of time it was just us sitting in the back, just a group of us doing
You did
absolutely
too.
you the two, useless during act two, just doing nothing. So then later, did you start doing costume work in teen drama? Is that where the journey began for you? And when did
I
that
think
start?
so. I mean, well, we were teen drama was really my introduction to performing in musical theater. And then I very quickly gravitated towards the costumes. I think like when we did Footloose.
Oh wow.
I mean, really,
That was my first show with teen drama.
it probably started with
For
Anything
those
Goes just
wondering,
because.
I played the rough and tough
Oh my
Chuck
God.
Cranston, as rough and tough as I perceived that myself to be. Wait a hot damn minute, Ren. That was
Oh, and
basically.
I was Earlene, and I put on that southern accent like it was like I was born with it.
Oh, to be young and bad at acting.
Well, it was also like we were doing Footloose not set in the 80s, and I was very disappointed by that because I was like, any excuse to buy something that is a costume, I was
Yeah.
in. And
And
I mean, I think
also,
that really started from when I was dancing when I was a kid.
yeah. Which is a tragedy, I think, of Footloose the musical. Footloose the musical, gosh, this, I swear you guys, the talk back is such an interesting show where I delve into people's lives and crafts, and we don't really talk about Footloose, but today we're talking a little bit about Footloose. Footloose is one of those shows where like the movie set in the 80s, it was made in the 80s, and the musical just isn't. The musical is just like ambiguous. It's like it's whenever you want it to be. And so like that's kind of like how most people do and direct it, but I think that's the tragedy of it. I think it will be,
Especially in the year of 2004.
it's just a better product. It's not a good musical, so put it in the 80s so we can be like, oh, it's tragic, and it's the 80s though, so we love
It's like,
it.
no, now we're just dealing with the tragedy that was fashion in 2004. I mean, it was like me and Sophie wearing the shortest skirts we could get away with on stage and skate sneakers.
I literally, yeah, I remember in the opening when I wasn't Chuck, I was random guy in Chicago, wherever he was from before that. I was wearing like the most random costume. I don't even remember, but it was like a weird linen black shirt I was wearing because 2004. And
oh my God, yes.
It was just really strange. Anyway, back to your career. So costumes.
Yes. And maybe it was How to Succeed that I like sort of asserted myself into like, this is what I'm going to wear. I mean, that was my favorite part. Like besides hanging out with everyone and being on stage, like was buying the costumes and getting to dress up. And then I think a couple years later, I don't know, I remember going on a shopping trip for one of the shows, I think with Christina Marinelli, where we bought, like we were, it might've been Pajama Game. So that was the last year I did. What was your last year of Teen Drama?
I did.
Which show?
Seussical was my last as an actor.
Okay.
And then I came back to help out for Millie because everyone did.
yeah.
That's inside. Yeah. So that, yeah, I did. Seussical was my last. I was 19. And that was the last. Yeah.
That was the year you graduated. Yeah.
Yeah. That was the year that they made it true teen drama. When it was like, mm-hmm. it used to be 12 to 18. I think they,
well, because they needed more people. Yeah. Like,
so then
stage,
they shifted it to be 13 to 19. And that was the last of it.
But yeah, it's, I did end up doing costumes for like Cinderella and Music Man.
And at this point, are you saying to yourself, oh, this is what I want to do. Like, this is my thing. But I mean, you're super young. So like, that doesn't need to be your thing.
I didn't
like,
know it was a career. Like, I don't know what blinders I had on as a kid growing up in New York, going to Broadway shows, not realizing that I could be a costume designer or a wardrobe head. Like, even what those jobs were. I went to performing arts high school. Like, I was apparently the wardrobe supervisor of the senior dance show.
I just didn't call myself that.
I found the paperwork and I was like, I don't even remember doing this. Like, I was in the senior dance show.
It's so, you know, it's so interesting though, because I think that so much of the, I think when we're younger, we do at it. For, I think we literally do have some sort of blinders on sometimes. We're like, I want to do this, I want to do that, but there's no, I mean, there's no way I can do that. And like, well,
yeah,
sure, literally there is. First and foremost, you're under the age of 21, so clearly your entire life's ahead of you.
Yeah.
And two, like, yeah, those things do exist. And so, yeah, sometimes we forget what we're like.
I think I put a lot of blame on the adults in my life because I feel like someone should have just like taken me by the arm, stared me dead in the eye and was like, you can be a costume designer. Mm. Like, I think that's the level I needed because I'm sure someone said it to me in passing once and I was like, yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. Like,
And so, no. so when did that then shift to, this is what I'm doing and I'm this is my career, my craft. Like, when did that start to come about?
Well, I remember there was a distinct moment when I was going to SUNY Purchase. I think I was a sophomore there that year and I was taking a ballet class. Like the grad students at Purchase would teach dance classes to the non-majors. And I was like, well, I danced for like 15 years, so I know what I'm doing. And I met another girl in the class and she was a costume design major. And I was like, you're a what now? Mm. Like, I didn't know that was a thing and I didn't know that was a thing here. And I ended up taking a costuming class and then inevitably transferring to New Paltz. And that's where I met Andrea Varga, who became sort of like my mentor and like my unofficial advisor. And I actually auditioned for the acting program at SUNY New Paltz. Cause again, I was like, I want to re-enter theater. I went through 2.5 years of not doing theater not doing theater in school or performing arts. Cause I was a dancer in high school. So I met Andrea and then I auditioned. The audition was terrible. I had never had to memorize a monologue. We always did musicals. You don't have monologues in musicals. Or I never did because I was like the dumb blonde half the time. And I bombed it. It was so bad. And they were like, is there anything else you want to do? And I was like, costume design, maybe? I don't know. And I took her class and was like, oh yeah, this is the thing. This is what I want to do. Like, I did a London theater seminar. It's like 2 weeks in London in January, like over the winter break. And we saw like 9 shows and we got to talk with theater professionals. We got to go to like the V&A. We got to get to see backstage at the National Theater and like touch the costumes. And Andrea was the one that spearheaded that. And I was like, I was like, this is what I want to do. But I was so deep into college that changing my major at that point would have been ridiculous. So it was like, okay, I'm gonna go to grad school, I guess. She was like, yeah, go to grad school, find a program that will pay you to go. Because a lot of like the smaller, just like theater master's programs will offer you money. They'll offer you assistantships. So like, you know, you go to NYU and Yale, you're paying out of your pocket. But a lot of these state schools will pay you.
I literally had a conversation yesterday with someone about like, oh, NYU. Yes, 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 yes. They're never, I mean, I'm sure someone paid them, but it wasn't me.
Yeah. No, no.
The loan company paid them, and I just haven't paid back that loan.
Exactly. So I ended up, I got really lucky. I got into University of Illinois and went to grad school for 3 years. The summer before I left for grad school, I actually worked on an off-Broadway show with Andrea and like fell in love with the job. I mean, I was working at Johnny Rockets in Queens and working off-Broadway during the day. Like,
what was the show?
What was it called? I'm remembering the most recent one I did with that theater and not the name of this one. It's like Hemingway and Gellhorn.
Sure.
But I don't remember if that's what it's called, because it was the same year that HBO came out with the same story with Nicole Kidman.
Oh, yeah.
So the theater is called the Mint Theater Company, and their whole shtick is like forgotten plays. So like, of course, I forget the plays.
Yeah, that's the point. I think you're on brand,
yeah,
if anything.
Yeah,
that's
it's literally fine. It worked out great. And that was like a great learning experience for me. And like,
and was,
I was
on,
like, yes.
Was Andrea the head
coach? She was the designer.
She was a designer.
And she was a designer, and I was just her. I was her assistant. I wasn't even doing wardrobe.
Well, we know her work from other places as well.
She was like an assistant for, I want to say it was like Rocky Horror. I know her husband worked on the Spider-Man musical, but she's done mostly like off-Broadway because she does a lot of the shows up in New Paltz.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then that summer, she actually had her her son, her only kid, and she sort of took a little bit of a step back, I think, from doing all the shows. Like a lot of times costume designers are very hard to see and hang out with because we're often working 4 or 5 shows at once to make ends meet. And that's why a lot of them end up teaching, because you have to do so much, like unless you're Paul Tazwell. And even Paul Tazwell is doing 15 million shows.
He literally has like at least, I've never seen a Broadway season, and you know, with the exception of the last couple of years, obviously, where Tazwell didn't have at least 3 shows that he designed.
Yeah.
Like,
and I mean, that's common.
When the Tonys come around, he usually has at least 2 nominations in the same category. But I think that's the thing that a lot of people, you know, a lot of non-theater professionals don't kind of get. I think it's so interesting too, the benefit of working with a seasoned costume designer, to kind of let you know about this kind of stuff as well, because so often we jump into these careers and we're like, well, this isn't enough money to do the things that I need. So we have to get something. I remember when I first started, you know, dating my girlfriend, and I would talk about, you know, she's a lover of the arts, supports the arts, isn't in the arts though, you know? So when I would tell her, I'm like, yeah, I'll probably get this amount for this. And she was like, that's for how long? I'm like, it's just about 6 weeks. And then takes a calculator out. She goes, you should be getting this. I'm like, oh, it doesn't work that way, unfortunately.
Something we're trying to change too.
Until you have an agent and you're a full member of the union, even then, you know, it just depends. And it also, you know, as we all know very well, it also depends on a lot of other socioeconomical things that where the broader community is starting to take a deeper look at, you know, in the wake of the Black Lives Matter movement. So there's a lot that goes into the industry that needs so much fixing, certainly in terms of wages and how people shouldn't have to work on a bunch of different shows in order to just pay their rent. You know, you should be teaching because you want to teach and not because you can't afford to live. Like, you're a Broadway designer and you're also doing this and that. It's like, come now. It's like we should be finding ways of giving living wages to these people, because it's full time work. I mean, the work that you do, even as an assistant or an associate, I mean, more so when you're the right.
Yeah.
When you're the right associate hand.
Is doing most of the work. Once a Broadway show opens, you're dealing with the associate. You're not dealing with the designer. I mean, like Paul came to our show last March in 2020. Like he came and like, you know, he's very quiet. He's very like low profile when he walks backstage. And I'm just like, oh God, Paul Tazewell's here and we're a hot mess and this room's insane. And like, we forgot the glasses. Like it was a little bit of like, oh, okay. Meeting an idol. It's fine.
Yeah, it's so often. But yeah, I think people forget that. I mean, I remember anytime I for many a year worked with, you know, he's now my good friend, my colleague Rajendra, but I was an assistant for a lot of, you know, the first, you know, half of us knowing each other, I was an assistant before becoming an associate. But, you know, for those shows, it's like, it's a lot of work to assist somebody because like it's all of it.
Yeah.
Like and especially as a director, it's like, you're not just assisting on the work, you're assisting on everything around the work and everything, because like, that's your job. It's your responsibility. And in turn, you're kind of learning what it is to be a professional director. You know, for me, I didn't have anyone, you know, my Andrea was Rajendra, because I had I didn't know any directors who are professional, like working on Broadway, off Broadway, television. I didn't know anybody when I decided to finally like commit to that. Because for a long time, I was like, oh, I want to be an actor. I'm going to be this. I'm going to be that. And then there was some time in grad school where I said, I'm just going to be a director. And then later a writer. But like, I was like, this is what I want to do. Cool. I have no. So then I just did everything blindly. I started Mount Carmel Theater Company blindly. Mm-hmm. Learned everything on the spot because I had to. And then finally Rajendra came to my production of Jesus Christ Superstar and we sat, and he invited me to come to his office and we sat and we spoke and I was like, I'm just grateful to like have a professional director who I can just ask questions to. And now, you know, it went from him being that to me to be him now being like just one of my closest friends. But it's that same mentality where it's like, when we're younger, we want to learn everything and we're going to do everything and we're going to keep saying yes, because that's like the rule of the game. As long as it's, and this is what I always tell people, as long as you feel safe, it's not inappropriate, say yes, because like that's the only way to move forward. Unless it's going to make you uncomfortable, unless it's dangerous, then you say no. And you know, sometimes,
but it's also like no one ever tells us that it's fake it till you make it most of the time. Like you don't have to go to school to do any of this.
Yeah,
like you really don't.
I don't have a degree in directing or writing.
I have a degree in costume design because I didn't go to college for it and I did not know what I was doing and it was the right path for me, but like you don't need that. You need it to teach for some reason. I'm like, I didn't learn how to teach in grad school. I don't know what makes me qualified to teach a bunch of college kids. Like
I know, I literally, and you know, it's so funny. I had been teaching, I'm quite the opposite, right? So for years, I've directed regionally, I've directed, I've assisted off Broadway. I've taught every single level. I was the teaching assistant in grad school. And I got my MA, not MFA, my MA in educational theater. And I was soon told that I can't get a job teaching at a college because an MA isn't a terminal degree. And so for years, I've always wanted to teach theater on a college level. Not like as this is the thing that I'm doing. Like I don't want to be a tenured professor per se, but I always wanted that to complement the work that I do as a director. And I kept getting no. And I was like, I knew what I'm doing. So finally, my undergrad had an open position and I interviewed for it, you know, a year ago, and I got hired in the spring. I'm going back in the fall. But like when I was at my interview, a lot of these questions were like, we know you're a first time professor. I'm like, I got this. Like, I don't want to sound like a egotistical, but like I'm a director. I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And so it's just insane that the education system was like, you know, relies heavily on these terminal degrees. It's crazy. I can go on a whole big tangent about what's wrong with college and universities.
The other thing that kills me, and this is especially with education, because I applied to a lot of educational jobs when I graduated from grad school because I didn't know what the fuck I was going to do. I like they expect you to have all this experience. And it's like, well, someone has to say yes first.
Yes. I blew
like
my
someone
microphone.
Has to be the first one.
Yes. Because that happened to me. I applied to a trillion colleges. I wish I was lying about the numbers, like a trillion. And I was like, at one point, and it was the same thing, Caitlin, when I was being a direct, when I started directing, I was like, I want to be this person, this person, this person. And I'm like, and finally, I kept like, well, you don't have your major credits on your resume. I'm like, well, someone needs to give me one, and then I'll have them. And like, Regina was the first person to be like, oh, you're talented. You be my assistant. And I worked with them all the way through regional to off-Broadway because someone finally was like, yes, you're qualified to do this, so do it. Not, let me look at your resume. Oh, you haven't done it yet. I'm like, of course I haven't done it yet. I'm sitting in a job interview.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That is such a thing.
Which is so
frustrating.
Which is something that I look at now as I'm getting older. And certainly as you're getting older, as you're becoming more seasoned, like certainly the trajectory for your career is going to surpass being an assistant or associate. You're going to be designing shows and, you know, and for me, like,
or just wardrobe supervising. I'd be fine with that.
In any case, and for me, I want to go back to that in a second. And for me, at one point I said to myself, okay, I have to stop being an assistant, right? Like I don't want to do that anymore. Like I not to say that I learned everything I need to learn, but now I'm just ready to do the thing and then be able to teach others. And I always have to like remember, like when I do get those opportunities now to be in the chair, to remember like the young Adam Maces who could not, for the love of God, get someone to say yes to them because he didn't have an MFA in directing. He didn't have a major regional on his resume. He didn't have an off-Broadway or Broadway credit on his resume. Mm-hmm. And I feel there's so many people in those shoes even now where it's like people are just saying no because it's easier to look at a resume and it's like, nope, that easy peasy. Don't need to see your work. I need to know if you can handle the pace. I'm like, that's stupid. I love how you stopped me before and you asked, and you didn't ask anything. I asked. I'm about to ask. And you said, or wardrobe supervision. Tell me, what is wardrobe supervision? How is that different from designing?
Okay, so the costume designer of a show creates the look. They work with the director. They create what everyone's wearing. So we'll use Hamilton for the example, obviously. In Hamilton, it's Paul Tazewell. He created the costumes back in the public. Then, you know, they transition to Broadway. He has an associate and a team of assistants that work for him that I work with very closely as the wardrobe supervisor. And it's the wardrobe supervisor's job to maintain the show. So it is my job to keep the show looking like the design that Paul created. Now with Hamilton specifically, they have a design team that is continuously working. Like they do not stop working. Like they did, you know, in 2020, because everyone did, but on smaller shows, like when I was doing School of Rock, the designer was Anna Luizos, and I knew the design team because I was part of the design team on Broadway. Then I became a wardrobe assistant and then the wardrobe supervisor. So like I get to sort of use my designer brain to like maintain that. So if we have, you know, a company member's costume falls apart and we need a new one. In Hamilton, I put a costume order in. We repair the one best we can. We'll get what we call a stopgap option from the design studio. So they have like a stock of costumes that has ever been in the show that anyone's ever worn. We'll bring those in and we'll throw them on people while they're waiting for their new clothes to get made. Mm-hmm. On a show like School of Rock, we had company members. We had a turnover where a bunch of people left the show and we had new people come in. And they don't hire the costume designer to deal with that. It then becomes my job. Mm-hmm. So I have to either work with the design team or use my brain and come up with something for them to wear, especially if there is no stock for a show like School of Rock. And it's contemporary clothes.
And so are you recreating from the original, like in School of Rock?
Yeah. It's for School of Rock, definitely. I mean, but all the kids are wearing uniforms. So that's all Flynn O'Hara stuff. And then the Dewey stuff gets built, so I have to get the okay from the producers to order these expensive costumes. So I have to call those costume shops in New York and be like, hey, can you build this for me? Luckily, I know them all. The ones for that show. And then for the adults, like for the parents and teachers in that show, they all wore stuff that was bought. Like nothing was built for them. So I had to like go to the mall and buy something that looked as close as possible to that thing. And
that's
what I was doing, yeah, I mean, it's a lot.
Well, no, I tell you why it's fascinating, not to cut you off quickly, because it's so cool when I learn things. I did not know that. I thought when a show opens on Broadway, much like a script, it's frozen. Costumes are frozen. This is what they're going to wear forever. I didn't know there was wiggle room in some shows.
I mean, it's wiggle room because it has to be. So sure. For a really good example is like the fabric they use in Hamilton. Fabric gets dyed and locked. So there's a certain dye lot for a fabric. For example, like the leggings that the women's ensemble wears in Hamilton. Every time they buy, they find this fabric. It's called Ponte fabric. They find it, and then it gets dyed differently. So it's all different tones. So every time we're replacing them for people, it's a new dye lot. So everything's a little off. Now, the design doesn't necessarily change. Sometimes it tweaks here or there. I mean, like, it'll go up the ladder sometimes if we get a new track. So every track of Hamilton is different, even in the ensemble. All those women are not wearing the same things. Their corsets are slightly different. The leggings are the same. The vests are the same. But it's the variants are very subtle. So those are the same. But on a show like School of Rock, where you're not building everyone's costumes, you kind of just gotta use what you can get.
There it is.
Like it's a lot of, I mean, on Broadway, what they'll do is they'll have the associate come in, and the associate will then get paid for a few weeks work to work with the wardrobe supervisor, schedule a fitting with the new person and get them into the correct clothes.
Sure. Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy. All right. I'm like wrap my brain around that. While I do that, let's take a quick break for the old dad game. But we'll be back in like a minute with Caitlin Day. See you in a minute.
Bye.
This chat is brought to you by Audible. Audible is the leading provider of spoken word entertainment and audiobooks, ranging from bestsellers to memoirs, news, business, and more. And now you can start your very own free trial by heading to www.audibletrial.com/thetalkback. Every month, members get one credit to pick any title from thousands of selections, plus two Audible originals and access to daily news digests such as the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and the Washington Post, not to mention guided meditation programs. Audible allows you to download titles and listen offline anytime, anywhere. It's perfect for long trips or even cozy afternoons to yourself. The app is free and can be installed on all smartphones and tablets, and you can listen across devices without losing your spot. I just started listening to Becoming by Michelle Obama, and it's simply sensational. Plus, it's narrated by the former First Lady herself. Again, Audible isn't just audiobooks. They have podcasts, guided wellness programs, theatrical performances, A-list comedy, and exclusive Audible originals that you won't find anywhere else. To start your free 30-day trial, head to www.audibletrial.com/thetalkback. That's www.audibletrial.com/thetalkback. All right, welcome back to the show. I'm with Caitlin Day, KMFD. Caitlin blew my mind because I've worked in the theater for many years and for some reason never knew stuff like this. Like, you know, but I think it's so interesting because it's important for directors to know all this stuff. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of us don't know all the intricacies, and so it's fascinated. How did you, was School of Rock your first Broadway show?
School of Rock and American in Paris at the same time.
And how'd you get involved with both of those?
So I met Lisa Zinni, who is the associate for both of those, through Pennsylvania Shakespeare Festival. I was a stitcher there for a couple of summers, and they hire Broadway costume designers to come do their shows, or off-Broadway costume designers, what have you. And I just sort of, you know, talked to them and made friends and was like, hey, I'm a costume design major. And, you know, I literally never for a moment thought that I would be working on Broadway, like ever. And I was going through a couple of months of unemployment after graduating with my MFA and was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And I got one design job through another designer I met at PSF, Sam Fleming. I was working upstate at Bridge Street Theater. And while I was up there, I got a call about a film and I got a call about Broadway. I accepted the film, got the call from Lisa Zinni an hour later, 2 hours later, and accepted the Broadway show because it was paying $20 an hour and the film was paying nothing, but they would house me and give me food. And so that's, I think that was like the fork in the road of like whether I would do film or theater. And I was like, nope, theater's definitely it. $20 an hour is way better than 5 weeks of, I think it was 5 weeks. I don't know, of, you know, being in Montauk with John Hamm, which like that was a decision to make, you
but
know?
Also like fucking pay people like,
I mean, it's sort of like one of those intern level things where they're like, well, we're making up to you because we're giving you housing and food. And it's like,
you're giving
like,
me housing and food because I have to survive.
Like, you're banking on the fact that I'm living at home with my parents, which I am, but like still.
But like, but not even that. It's like, and this is all internships, but specifically this. Well, we're housing and feeding you. Well, that's great because I'm literally leaving my place of dwelling and going to work there. So I hope you're housing me or else I'd be homeless. And I hope you're feeding me because then I'd starve because you're not paying me.
And it's such a privilege. Like, you have to be so privileged to even get one of those internships because if you have to pay any kind of bills, you're screwed. At that point, I was in credit card debt up to my eyeballs and I had actually taken a loan out the last 2 years I was in grad school because like, yes, it was an assistantship. They were paying me. They gave me a tuition waiver. It was great. $1,000 a month is not enough money to live off of.
Of course.
Unless you have a husband or a wife or a partner and you are debt free when you're starting.
Yeah. I mean,
because I had friends who did it. I mean, but they had partners with them that would cook them dinner. And so they didn't have to go out for every meal. I went out for every meal because I couldn't. We didn't have time.
Yeah.
I was in the theater from 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. We had an hour for dinner, an hour for lunch. I'm like, when do you think I'm cooking?
Yeah.
I'm also like 24 years old. Like,
and that's, you know, and I think it's bigger, you know, I think the theater, I mean, I think that issue is bigger than the theater. I think it's, anytime I see an internship that isn't paying at this point of the game that is requiring so much time. You know, when I had the theater company in Williamsburg, I offered internships for like to get because I knew some people came up to me like, hey, I need like an extra couple of college credits. And they said I can like work for the theater company. I'm like, great. Like, it's not a lot of work.
Yeah.
But it's the work that I need to get done. And so I didn't pay, but it wasn't a ton of work. Most of your time was, you know, okay. And you literally got college credit. And the people, the two interns I think I had literally were able to like graduate on time because they needed those two extra credits, you know?
Yeah.
But then you think about like John Hamm movies and it's like, how are you not just paying everybody? Just pay everyone.
Right. Like how much is he getting paid versus like what? Because I would have just been like, I don't know if I would have been credited as a PA because most of the time when you're starting out on a film, you start off as a PA.
Yeah.
Doesn't He's matter what department you're working for.
It's like, oh, they're a production assistant. It's like, cool. That's just, we're just lumping us. We're lumping all the people who we're not paying as production assistants.
And it worked out so well, though, because I met these amazing women that I am like, I consider family at this point. We all weirdly grew up in New York. We're all born in the same year. Like, well, not all of us, Amanda's not, but like there were three of us that all had weird connections. Like one of my friends, Serafina, she went to college at Adelphi with Michelle Silvani.
Oh.
And and like my friend Courtney went to high school with my best friend. We all just never met. And then we all met working on School of Rock.
Mm.
And like, these are like my core people that I keep in contact with. I mean, like they're like my best friends, you know? And we all get each other work, give each other work, give each other advice, like on,
which is like the
goal. Should I take this job that only wants to pay me $500, but it's with a reputable director or whatever? Like they were the first ones that were like, stop accepting design jobs for $500.
Yeah.
Because I was doing that. I mean, you sort of have to for a little while, but like you shouldn't have to. That's nothing.
At one point, you have to like draw a line in the sand. It's kind of like what I said. Like, I'm not going to assist people anymore. It's like you have to draw a line in the sand. It's like if I'm always the assistant, no one's going to hire me to be the person in the chair. They're always going to say, that's just an assistant.
But and there are people that do love being an assistant.
Absolutely. It's literally
like,
what you want.
That is also a job. Like,
yeah,
that
there's
is,
literally, there's career assistant directors on Broadway.
Yeah.
Like these are people that is what we do. We set shows and we look at shows and we report back to, you know, the I was about to say Hal Prince, but, you know, he's passed. But, like, we report back to Hal Prince. We report back to the directors and tell them everything that's happening. And for me, I was like, if I ever that's a great job. And it's a good job. And I know I've met a lot of assistant, professional assistant directors on Broadway, and they make a lot of, you know, decent money, and it's fun, and they enjoy it. They get to know these casts, and sometimes they work with a director for a few shows. And I was like, I just want to create my own art. And so I have to start saying no to things. And so I did Little Rock off Broadway as the assistant. It was a full experience. And I was like, cool. The next time I do an off-Broadway show, I'd like to be directing this off-Broadway show. And if that's not meant to be, that's not meant to be. I spent so many years being the number two, and I'm ready. I have a lot of ideas I want to do. I have a lot I want to accomplish. And so, yeah, there's no shame in it at all. I think that a lot of, and also being an assistant, I mean, I can only speak for my career, yeah, for my field rather. Being an assistant director is friggin' hard. There's put-ins, dealing with, you know, especially on a show like, I can just imagine the assistant director on Chicago who needs to deal with every random celebrity they put in that show and every random ego that they had to put in for put-ins like that. And that the stage manager and the AD must, like, go insane. It's like, oh God, Usher didn't want to, like, do the two-step today, so he changed it up to a five-step. And it's like, you know, I just could imagine that. And so, yeah. It's so interesting that you're on the show. I believe we mentioned earlier before the break, we met each other in the Teen Drama Club in Richmond Hill, Queens, New York. I think you're the seventh teen drama alum I've had on the show at this point. I've had Ed Harley was my first. Then I had Christina, Christian, Anthony. I forget. Maybe that's it. But I'm leaving one person specifically out because you had a really cool reconnection with this human being. The wonderful
say, you had
Robert Ariza.
Yeah.
The brilliant, Broadway's favorite, the regional theaters, Hamilton's favorite, all the favorites, Robert Ariza. And so you, I got to go see Robert in Hamilton, Chicago. It was probably one of I've never been more proud of a human being that I've worked with and called a friend in my entire life than working
with. Did you see him as Hamilton?
I saw him the weekend he played Hamilton.
Yeah.
I just so happened to, my girlfriend and I, we remember the story very differently. I remember that we were going to Chicago to see my girlfriend's family who lives like in West Dundee, which is a suburb of Chicago. And I remember we were going around that time and it just so happened that, oh, Robert's in Hamilton, let's go see Hamilton while we're there. And then, oh my gosh, even crazy, she remembers it, which as I'm saying it again, now it sounds more likely that we were planning a trip and then Robert's like, I'm Hamilton this week. And I was like, oh, we're going this is when we're going. We have to go.
Yeah.
And so I think I saw his first, either his first or a second. It was one or two. And it was just mind blowing. I was like, I knew Robert as a 12-year-old in Footloose.
I went to elementary school with him. His mom was my Spanish teacher.
So what was it like then when you got the job at Chicago Hamilton?
Okay, so Robert Ariza and I, like, at that point really didn't keep in touch. Like, we just knew each other through teen drama, whatever. And I knew he was in Hamilton because of social media. And I showed up for the job. The first night was the night that I saw the show, because that's literally what I said when they called me. I was like, cool, I haven't seen the show yet. Do I get to see it? And
can I see Hamilton?
That, and Heather. And
for those who want to know, now that before you got to see it on Disney Plus, the only way to see Hamilton at some point was to say, I need to get a job working on Hamilton. So
pretty much. So when I got there the first night, Heather, the wardrobe supervisor, the current one, the one I replaced, she was taking me around the theater, and I told her, I was like, oh, I grew up with Robert Ariza. And she goes, oh, we're going to go surprise him right now. And we walked to his dressing room, and like the way the door was, he was like behind the door, and Heather goes, oh, hey, Robert, I just want to introduce you to our new wardrobe supervisor. And I like peered out and I was like, hey!
Oh my gosh.
And he was like, oh my God, are you kidding me? And it was really exciting. I think that might've been his first night on as Lawrence Phillip.
Yeah.
As well. Like, it was, it was like, all right, you're going on as Lawrence Phillip. And I was like, oh, okay. So I get to watch him die twice. Okay, great.
Yeah. It was so cool. I remember he was on the, for those tuning in who haven't listened to the episode, but Robert was on, go check it out. It was a great chat I had with Robert a couple of years ago when he was in Chicago, Hamilton. But like, yeah, he was like, yeah, I basically have to memorize the entire show because I'm almost every track.
Yeah, I mean, well, Man 5 is also crazy. Like, that's his normal track, and he plays, you know, Mr. Reynolds. He plays Mr. Schuyler. He plays the Doctor. I'm missing people. It's fine. There's a lot of costume changes that happen for him. Like, he has all the coats. It's the track with all the coats.
Oh, yeah, there's so many coats.
Yeah.
It was so funny. I always tell people, I've seen Hamilton on Broadway. I saw it in Chicago. And
I haven't seen it on Broadway.
I saw it on Broadway before I saw it in Chicago because when my first started dating my girlfriend, she was like, I haven't seen Hamilton yet. Have you? I went, no. She goes, we're going to get tickets. And we did. Her sister came in and her nephew came in and we saw it. But I always say to people, I'm like, the Chicago Hamilton was the best cast of Hamilton that I've ever experienced. And I saw it on Disney Plus. And I also stand by the Chicago cast. It was just,
yeah.
I mean, who was playing the not sure it was Eliza, but it was the girl from
Angelica?
Montego Glover was in it.
And
I was just like, this cast is so great. And the guy who's playing Jefferson and Lafayette, Paris, I forgot his last name. But
Paris Nix, yeah.
It was
God.
It was a hungry cast. That's why I literally left the theater and I was like, that's a hungry cast. They want to be on Broadway tomorrow.
Did you have Tamar Green as Washington?
Yes.
Do you remember?
I did.
He's on Broadway now. Paris is in the San Francisco company.
Wonderful. Paris is
They're really
wonderful.
Great to work with.
I remember I was like, that's a hungry cast. They want to be on Broadway yesterday. And not saying that they're not happy being here, but like they are ready.
Oh, yeah.
I was just like, it was just incredible. I was like,
our Hamilton, Miguel is actually, I mean, he was supposed to, I don't know if he actually had his Broadway debut before the shutdown, but he's the Hamilton on Broadway now.
Yeah. It was just really a really cool thing. And it's so cool that, and I probably missed you being there for like a couple of months. Like you had probably, I think you got there a couple months after.
I got there. So yeah, Robert started in February and I started in May.
Yeah. So that all leads us to, did you get like a direct transfer then from Chicago to LA that was like, that's what you're doing?
So, okay. So like, let me tell you the story about how I was hired because it's hilarious.
I love it.
I have a friend. She was the company manager at School of Rock. And she was leaving School of Rock and she ended up getting the one of the assistant company manager jobs for the Ampegi company, which is the one that started in Puerto Rico.
Yes.
And then moved to San Francisco. And she gave me a hug goodbye at one point and was like, I'm bringing you with me. And I was like, LOL, I've been a wardrobe supervisor for a day, like literally a day. And she emailed me like several months later and was like, hey, send me your resume. And I was like, okay, right. Like this is going to happen. And I sent her my resume. I get a job offer for Margaritaville, another Paul Tazewell. And I was like, well, I'm going to do Margaritaville because Hamilton, yeah, okay. They have plenty of names on the table that they're going to choose from. And I signed the contract for Margaritaville. I was going to start the show. I was going to get paid, you know, $200 less a week than I was on School of Rock. But
you knew it was going to run for about 15 years. So you're like, I have to take Margaritaville.
Well, it was a set tour. It had some good dates. And like, I got to start the tour, which is something I hadn't done. And I sent the contract in, and 2 days later, I get an email from Scotty Westervelt, who's the wardrobe head in New York, and he's like the production wardrobe head. And he's like, hey, you didn't have your phone number on your resume, so I'm sending you an email so we can set up a phone chat. First, mortified that my phone number was not on my resume. Second, was like, oh my God, yes, we can talk tomorrow. And like, it was an interview that was essentially like, when can you get to Chicago?
It's like, tomorrow? I'm like, That's
and I was good. Like, I have to give, like, well, this is the thing. It was end of April of 2019. I was on School of Rock, and we were closing June, the beginning of June, June 6th. And I was like, well, my show closes in like a month. Can you wait that long? And their current supervisor and assistant were leaving at the end of May to go do Cursed Child in San Francisco.
Gotcha.
And I was like, oh God, I gotta leave the show a month early. And like the running joke on School of Rock, even with the kids and the parents and everything, was I won't leave this show unless it's Hamilton. Don't worry. And I mean, I guess I said all the right things. I interviewed with Scotty and Angela Kaler, who's the associate, and I was there 3 weeks. And like got there, I like home from beach. I was in Spokane, flew to New York, stayed for like a day, and then went to the next day started work.
Jeez. Insane.
Yeah. It was a whirlwind.
And so then, did you close out Chicago?
Yeah. Yeah. They also, when they interviewed me, I mean, they told me, they were like, hey, you are going to do LA. Like,
oh, so you just,
you know, we're not hiring you for Chicago and we're going to leave you hanging.
Yeah.
So I knew LA was happening.
And so then you get to LA and boom, shut down.
Yeah. Well, luckily I started working. So we closed the show in January of 2020 in Chicago, had like amazing closing night party. I've never closed a show before. So I was like, this is incredible. Well, a show that I was working on as a wardrobe person. I was at the closing party for a couple of other shows and worked in New York all of February and then drove across the country. Well, first I flew to California, found an apartment, signed a lease, flew back, drove across the country so I could have my car with me that I had just bought. Mm. And then worked for 2 weeks and we were shut down. It was very abrupt, as we all remember.
As we all know, which is so crazy. But now you're back. And is this, you know, is it, are feet on the ground there for a bit now?
Yeah. Yeah, I got here. When did I get here? June 30th. So I've been here for about 2 weeks. You know, I literally got here and we started working the next day. But I got lucky and found an apartment. So.
And is your, you know, and is the plan now you're with Hamilton for a few years and then see what comes of that after?
I will work with them as long as
until
they have me.
Until they say no.
I mean, that is, they have been very good to us throughout this whole pandemic. And like, even this startup process there, it's slower. Like, last time, you know, we were starting 8 a.m. days. We were in from 8 a.m. to like, I think it was 8 to 6 the first few days, and then it was 8 to 11. Like, we were doing 10 out of 12, but when the, I mean, 10 out of 12, they got us out of the theater really fast, like earlier than that. But we have to come in before the actors. We have a full work call. So we were work calling from 8 to noon, taking a break for lunch, and then it was half hour for 10.
Jeez.
And it was like, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. And now it's much more like, okay, we're doing fittings. We have to fit everyone. So we have everyone coming in, refitting their costumes, making sure everything works, making sure everyone's comfortable. I've got a few stitchers in with me. I've got my assistant. We have two of the design team here with us to help with the fittings. They've expanded the design team so they can have a couple of people with each company as they're starting.
That's good.
But the blessing and curse of our show is that, yes, we didn't get started, so we mostly have the same cast, but we do have some people that aren't coming back, and we never got started. Yeah. So, like, we don't have this established setup show like the other tours and the Broadway companies
do. Yeah, they're just
getting
back.
It's
we're
like, okay, but we're still setting up. We're
it's
still
first
organizing
day of school.
The wardrobe room. We're still, like, putting the fabric in drawers. We're still, like, figuring out laundry. Like, it's, but, like, you know, I talked to at least one of the other, I talked to a couple of the other wardrobe supervisors. Like, we sort of help each other out. And it's a very communicable sort of design wardrobe team meshing. Like, you know, we all have a common goal.
Yeah.
We want the show to open, but we also all understand that we're human beings.
Yeah, and, like, literally.
need to rest.
Absolutely. Well, I think it's incredible. I think, you know, this is, you know, I said in the intro, this is my first episode for a little bit. I took some time off, as everyone knows, because I've been doing too many podcasts. But I'm so happy that you're my first guest back after my little break. I think we've gotten so much out of today. You know, we learned that we should say yes. It's important to keep your phone number on your resume. And you know, if it's Hamilton, you can leave. That's okay.
Yeah, if it's Hamilton, you can leave. I want to add into the saying yes thing. It's also okay to say no.
Yes, I've been saying that.
And
for a
also
while.
Ask for more. Always, if you need more, ask for more.
Yeah, they're not going to just take. They're not going to rescind the offer from you. They're just going to say no for the more, which is the worst thing they're going to do. They're gonna be like, oh well, like, they asked for more, so now we don't want them at all. That's not how it works.
That's not a thing.
They'll just say
it's
no,
really
we can't
give
you that. And sometimes they're like, man, we probably can because we lowballed you anyway, because that's called negotiation. So
unfortunately,
Caitlin motherfucking Day, I got two out of it. I'm so happy that we're able to connect. I'm so happy that you're back to work. And that, like, we got to chat. You know, I think every now and then I love, everyone on the show knows my first love is theater. And every now and then I like to bring in people to talk about pieces of theater that they may not understand, they may not know about. So sometimes you get an actor who talks about life in regionals and tour life. And sometimes you get really brilliant wardrobe supervisors like yourself who can chat about that whole world. And perhaps if there's someone, you know, who didn't know that that's a possibility that they can do that, maybe they know it now. So thanks for coming. If people want to follow you, where can they do that? How do they see your stuff?
I am on Instagram as CaitlinDay42. It is a private account, but if you like friend request me and you're like, hey, I heard you on the podcast, I'll probably accept you.
Yeah,
I have another
that,
public account.
In case they do. I heard you on Adam Mace's podcast. I simply needed to speak to you.
I have a public account. It's Caitlin's Yarn.
You have
I think
two
it's
accounts?
Just Caitlin's Yarn. I do. I have a public account and a private account, but I haven't used the public account in like 5 months.
Well, yeah, because you have two accounts. Why'd you need to use two accounts?
I don't understand how people do it. I was like, oh, I'll do it. I'll have a Yarn account. And like, cause I was also fostering cats. So it was like, I needed a public account so people could see the cats that I was fostering.
So you can see the cats. So, you guys, I'm sorry I was away for so long. I'm doing so many podcasts. But make sure you follow Caitlin if she chooses to accept your friendship or her yarn. And while you're following people, you can, ooh, sirens. You can follow me on the Instagrams at, the_talkback_podcast. Gosh, that's no better one than that. You know where to find all that stuff in the show notes. And while you're there, like, subscribe, rate, review, and after you rate and review this show, go on over to the New York Mystery Machine and rate and review that. We're getting so much love on the New York Mystery Machine. New York Mystery Machine is slowly becoming my most successful podcast, and it's been 2 weeks.
Yes.
Niche. But Caitlin, thanks for coming on to the show. Let's chat in LS. We always reconnect every like 3 years, so I'm assume we'll reconnect in 2024.
It's about time, you know.
But for Caitlin and myself, I am Adam Mace, and this has been the Talk Back. Take care of yourselves and each other.